Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. I am thrilled right before the 4th of July holiday. We're ready to throw up some fireworks here on the podcast with another amazing guest and one of my favorite people, Alex. Alex, welcome. Would love to have you introduce yourself to our listeners, and I'm so thrilled to finally have you officially on the podcast.
I am officially happy to be here, I should say, as well. It's been me that's had to reschedule numerous times, so I apologize for that. And you're equally one of my favorite people, so I was excited to have this conversation as well. As far as who I am in a nutshell, my background is as a chief people officer who has been in this people HR space for 15 plus years, really closer to 20, but I say 15 plus because it makes me feel younger. I'm also a startup advisor, currently to three startups, but I am sort of hot off the presses signing up for a fourth. So, because, you know, I'm a glutton for punishment. Like, I want to spread myself really thin. They're all in the HR technology space, but that just happens to be by happenstance as well. And I've always been an in-house operator until basically the last 6 months, where I have gone fractional. So I'm working with a few different clients, really largely in the startup space, and right now mainly in tech and cybersecurity.
Oh, amazing. So lucky. You're spreading yourself maybe thin, but you're also spreading your wisdom and talent around multiple organizations, which I love that about fractional work and advising. And spread the expertise, spread the love.
Yes. And as you know, because we're friends, I never have a shortage of things to say. So opinions galore. So I doubt we'll have moments in this podcast of, quietness. I think it may be, how do we actually talk about all the things in this time?
I know. I'm so excited. And listeners, I am so lucky because a lot of times on the podcast, I am looking for topics. I'm looking for experts. And Alex brought an awesome idea for a topic and conversation, and kind of a spicy topic and conversation, which I would expect nothing less. And you'll know from our podcast title, we are talking about manipulation in the workplace. And I know that is something certainly I've experienced, and I'm sure many of our listeners are as well. So I would love, Alex, for you to kick us off and tell us a little bit more about, what you thought of when you thought of this topic, and what we're going to chat more about today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you teeing it off in that regard. And I will say it came to me, as a lot of random topics do, on an airplane. And that's when I was texting with you. And I just thought, you know what? This could be a really good topic. And for myself, kind of similar to you, it also comes from lived experiences, which I think makes it so much easier to talk about, because you really know how you felt in those moments. And I think for so many other people, this may have been experiences that they have dealt with, and or maybe in listening to this conversation, they may realize, actually, wait, I thought I was dealing with something else, but actually maybe I was being manipulated. So I thought it was a really interesting topic from that regard. And, the practical sort of takeaway kind of individual that I am as well, I like to provide people with nuggets to just think about. I was like, how can you really think about spotting manipulation at work as well? Because it can be disguised and hidden in terms of, different types of behaviors. So I think that might be, if you're in agreement, it may be a great starting off point for us to think about, like, what are those signs or things that can show up?
I think that is a perfect place to start, because it is. I mean, it can be kind of insidious. It can be something that, like, oh yeah, look at this. And then all of a sudden you're like, what? It's almost I used to say about someone, no naming of names for me, but I used to say, I preferred one person because they'd like stab you in the front versus, the person that would like going for the hug, but they're secretly like shanking you at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I am all about, let's start and talk with those signs of manipulation and what that can look like.
Yeah. So one of the ones that, and I'm curious whether you've experienced this too, but a big one that I've noticed is flattery and charm. So I find that people that tend to be manipulative try to win you over with excessive compliments or praise or charm, but it all, you know, it's often with an ulterior motive. So, and, you know, I think you and I have talked about this in the past. Like, I always believed that, you know, a relationship should be about how we can be in service of each other. And I do like to assume positive intent. And I think majority of us do, but there are people out there who are really kind of going into a, you know, relationship, whether it's new or otherwise, thinking what they can get out of a situation and not really thinking about the other and the other person's needs. And so I think flattery and charm can be dangerous because you actually think, oh, this person really cares about me. This person really likes me. Like, they're out there for my best interests, when that may not always be the case. So I don't know if you've experienced that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so interesting because there have been a couple of times in my career that it's totally worked on me. And I've been like, oh, look at this. This is amazing. And my mm-hmm. husband has been like, I don't trust this person. Like, something's not right. And I'm like, and then like a year later, I'll be like, damn it, my husband was right again. Like, I really should listen to him. But it almost reminds me, like, there's parallels with this kind of flattery, excessive compliment to relationships and mm-hmm. like abusive relationships and love bombing. It almost reminds, we talk a lot about, you know, love bombing when we talk about personal relationships, but it's almost like love bombing or attention bombing. When someone is manipulating us in the workplace, it can be really hard to recognize.
It can. And it's always, you know, I think for me, when it's happened, I'm like, what is this person's ulterior motive, right? What are they trying to get out of this situation? And I think it can be very different. You know, they may be looking for somebody to be an ally for a particular project or initiative. And it comes from a place of just using you while it's convenient for them, right? It really can be a wide variety of different things. But I do love this concept of love bombing, because I do think that is a lot of the times what it is. One experience that comes to mind is somebody that, and I know it's a pet peeve of both of us, is when somebody said to me, you know, your family, your home. And I was like, wow, this is so interesting. And I realized that was really just a manipulative tactic to make me feel like, oh, you know, I'm always going to feel safe here, right? Mm-hmm. But in essence, as we know, that creates unhealthy boundaries. That means that, you know, you can take me for granted, or you can also treat me any way you want because we're family, right? Or your home. And so I don't think that registered in the moment when it happened. In the moment, to your point, it worked on me. And I was like, wow, this is great. You know, somebody's looking out for me. They're talking about how they always, you know, say my name in, you know, in different rooms that I'm not in. But then I also realized that this person wasn't always saying great things about me in rooms we were both in. And I thought that was interesting, right? So why is this all happening behind the scenes when I'm not part of the conversation versus outwardly in other forms where I am present? So I thought that's interesting too.
Absolutely. And I know for me, I don't know if you found this, but I know I was always most vulnerable to manipulation when I was starting at a new organization mm-hmm. or starting a new role or a new important relationship. So maybe it's a new colleague. And it's to me, it's like, it's a little, is it intentional or is it a little bit of, oh, look at this shiny new person to connect with? And then the manipulation ends up being like, oh, you know, oh, I've got a new toy. You're not new anymore. I'm tired mm-hmm. of your opinions. And it's just, it can be so devastating. It can be incredibly harmful. It changes so much. And I think what's challenging for me, and I see this as a likely parallel for you, is I'm a relationship person. Mm-hmm. I navigate my work, my world, my life through the relationships I form with people. So I'm very invested in them. And it's like, how can you tell even sometimes when someone is looking to build a genuine relationship, a genuine connection that's mutually beneficial with you versus someone who's manipulating you or someone mm-hmm. who's maybe using you for their own devices.
Yep. And I think also to your point, like I definitely noticed it, you know, in joining organizations, it's happened, I've seen it. And you're also in that space where you're really keen to develop relationships, especially if you're in a CHRO mm-hmm. or CPO role. Yes. You know, it's key to develop those relationships with the leadership team. And, you know, I've joined organizations before where I knew that, you know, I was coming in to fix the HR function. I mean, so it was very much in me and in my mind to be like, what can I do to be different and figure out what's going on? But I think when that happens and the other person in particular knows that maybe HR hasn't been successful, that they can also play on your emotions as well. You know, feelings of guilt or fear or sympathy or get you to maybe comply with requests or demands that you maybe might not always or wouldn't have necessarily done. But again, people pleasing at the beginning, right? To prove yourself and gain credibility.
Absolutely. You're hitting on something that I think is a really interesting nuance of HR and HR leadership roles that we don't talk about enough. And it's to really gain credibility, to, you know, pull in, to fix problems, to get or keep that seat at the table. I hate that we're always talking about that, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You are frequently finding ways to be helpful, to be of help, to be of use, to show your value to your peers. And it makes it very easy for you to become a target of manipulation or to become a scapegoat, mm-hmm. just the way the role is structured. And it's like, you have to build those relationships. You're set up. I cannot recall a role where I started where one of the priorities wasn't building relationships immediately, gaining mm-hmm. buy-in of peers versus mm-hmm. a leader saying, you are the person I want in this role. You go do what needs to happen. It's almost like you're an internal politician campaigning. And so that people pleasing, it can be very dangerous, but mm-hmm. it also becomes an important part of the role initially too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this double bind.
It is. And because I wouldn't call myself, and you know me, a people pleaser by nature, but when you join an organization, you have to think about early wins that you're trying mm-hmm. to seek out as well. But it is funny you use the term politician, because a number of times it's been sort of said or asked me in my career, like, hey, you majored in politics and history. How did that come in useful in an HR career? And I was like, you have no idea, but extremely useful. Because if we think about corporate America, and sadly, how much, particularly in HR, our jobs sadly at times have become all about dealing with the politics, particularly within leadership teams. That's what makes it, that's actually what benefited me to understand how to navigate those situations. But what people forget is that becomes so tiring and you're not focusing on the actual work. And so, you know, honestly, that is what I've really enjoyed about Fractional, because you really do focus on the work. And if I ever did move back in-house, I'm not naive, and I recognize the fact that a certain amount of my job is going to be about managing those politics again. It just cannot be to the extent or a higher percentage than getting the work done. So I think that is where I've really struggled with it, and where I really want to be known and not be frustrated that I can't get the things I want to get done because I'm getting caught up in all this other stuff, all the swirl that's happening on the side.
Yes. Oh, that's perfect. The swirl, 100%. So, thinking about folks who are listening in, who are probably in-house, a lot of folks are still in-house. Bless you all. Thank you for the hard work you're doing. We're rooting for you,
We are.
but let's think of, some tips. Like, how can someone recognize when someone is building a meaningful, symbiotic relationship, a give and take relationship at work with you versus someone who is manipulating you or someone who's really looking to get things done through you in a non-reciprocal way?
Yeah, I think it goes back to one thing that stands out for me to start off with is transparency, where you feel like you're actually getting, first of all of the information to get your job done, right? I find that sometimes if people are trying to manipulate you, that they will withhold information, intentionally, and important information or half truths, because that creates a level of control for them over a situation. Whereas people who are out there and want you to be successful, they will give you all the context and information that you need in order to get your job done, because they're really looking out for your success and they actually truly want to be collaborators.
Yes.
So that's one thing. The other thing I would say is when it's really safe to provide two-way feedback. I mean, I think that's a huge one. I remember working with somebody who constantly gave me, an executive constantly gave me feedback. And, their approach was sort of pretty terse and direct, which is fine. I'm a direct person. But at the same time, made it initially feel like, oh, it goes both ways. But then I realized it really did. And I did try to give feedback, it didn't land well, or there was an excuse, or there was pushback. Or no, that's not me. I remember giving feedback about that person's team, and there was always a reason, because it was also about that person's brand, right? Nobody wants their brand to look poorly, I feel like, if they're somebody that likes to manipulate situations, because they want to maintain a really strong personal brand internally as well. So I think finding somebody that actually does listen to the feedback, as well as sort of dishes it out, is another piece. And then the third one that comes to mind right now is shifting blame,
Oh, yes.
not deflecting responsibility or blame others for their own mistakes or shortcomings, or just being hypocrites. Like, they have expectations around how you should show up at meetings, being on time, things like that, but then they don't do that themselves. So they create that level of a double standard as well. So I think those are a couple things that immediately come to
I love those. Those are good. I'm like reflecting on some examples in my own career. Maybe someone in particular. No, I'm not naming names.
No, nobody's naming names, you know?
This is totally a side note, but one of my favorite interview questions is like, hey, tell me about your favorite leader. Why were they your favorite leader? And then I'm like, oh, tell me about your least favorite leader. And you don't have name to name names. And sometimes people just like come in really hot and they're like, I am naming names. And they'll just like go after it. I'm like, okay, you a lot to unpack there. I can relate, but okay. totally off topic, but always fun.
No, but always interesting. I mean,
Always fun.
I believe in sharing your lived experience. That's just personal to me, but
Yes.
and in order to sort of help, because they've obviously shaped me and shaped us in terms of what we will and will not put up in a sort of quote unquote work environment now. But at the end of the day, I don't believe in to each their own calling out specific individuals,
Yes.
because one, I at the end of the day, I think they know what they're doing. So it's kind of pointless. It's more about, are they ever going to change, and will people really feel comfortable calling them out? But sadly, I think a lot of the people that do this and are in senior roles, people around them are fearful of them, so they don't take them to task on these things.
100%. 100%. I agree. I think too. So I'm reflecting on my own experiences. And one thing for me is the just like consistency in general. Someone clearly like knows your interest or things you're interested in and tries to connect with you on those things. Mm-hmm. And then later they seem to be not interested in them at all. And you're like, that's kind of weird. Like, why would you pretend that that's your favorite band? Like, that's not even relevant. Like, how odd. And then how they talk to you one-on-one, mm-hmm. you hit on this a little bit already, but how they talk to you one-on-one versus how they talk in a larger meeting.
Yes.
And the like, oh, that person just doesn't know. Like, I totally understand where you're going, Stephanie. Like, you're totally right, spot on. But then when you get into the larger group, that's not happening. And it's almost like they're people pleasing to you one-on-one, and then they're running with whatever their personal agenda is in the larger group meeting.
Yeah.
That's one for me that has come up a ton. It's so easy, especially when you're in HR, I think, too, because there's things you know. It's a blessing and a curse. There's information you have that others don't. You're like, oh, you know, it's just not the time. I understand. Like, we're slow playing this, whatever. And it's almost like you start to gaslight yourself into thinking like, no, this is just how the process has to play out. Like, be patient. And then lo and behold, you're like, oh, no. This is not good. I've been completely manipulated here.
Yeah. And I think you hit on the word that I was thinking about too, which is consistency. I think that inconsistent behavior is something that I've noticed that really scares me, because you can find, I've been in situations where I've experienced that, somebody being sort of charming one moment and hostile the next. And that's left me feeling very confused and off balance. And was like, you know, you start asking, what have I done? Or are they having a bad day? Or what it is? And again, you know, where I usually land is, oh, is it because I said this and they feel like I'm not in their corner now? So this is a form of punishment, right? For not aligning with them. But it's kind of like, no, I'm going to have my own point of view. And guess what? It's not always going to align with yours. And what scares me is for people earlier on in their, particularly in their HR careers, that are working with senior leaders, they don't, quote unquote, feel like they have the kahunas, the balls to do that or to say that. So they will just go along with those behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I get it, where we become more confident in our own skin, the older we get and the more lived experiences we have. So I definitely, you know, probably wouldn't have felt comfortable having this conversation 5-10 years ago, even, right?
100%,
But between where I am in my life and how comfortable I am in my own skin, and because I've been so through so many different experiences, I think it's important for people to know, and frankly know earlier, to spot signs of it, like we're talking about, before it becomes a real problem. I wish I'd known earlier, right? And I think maybe I did know certain things earlier. I just didn't realize it was manipulation per se.
Yeah. And you're hitting on something so important about early career HR professionals, because I think there's a really unique dynamic at play in that, depending on your organization, whether it's a smaller organization and maybe you're an HR team of one and you're at a mid-level, you're, you know, an HR manager or director, or and you're in a larger organization and you're supporting leaders within a division, and you're, you know, maybe early to mid-level in your career, the power imbalance just structurally, just based on position and hierarchy in the organization is incredibly difficult to navigate, because here you are as an HR manager or an HR VP, and you're dealing with a senior executive. They have much more influence as an operator, as a senior executive, than you do. It becomes really hard to navigate that in the right way and to avoid being manipulated. It is a huge challenge. It's very difficult.
It is. And, you know, I will tell you, I even experienced backlash in terms of speaking my mind in an instance where it would have created a bigger opportunity for me. You know, I worked with somebody who felt like an ally and a supporter and an advocate and a mentor for quite some time. And they kind of took me under their wing as a protege and really kind of said, you know, I could see you sort of being my successor. But what happened was when I started to have different points of view and didn't align on certain things, that all of a sudden came off the table. And so it's the old school adage of, if you're not with me, you're against me kind of mentality, right? And that's sad because, you know, having different perspectives should be what makes us all better in the workplace. And the fact that this person also touted that, like in a public setting, made it just feel even more manipulative.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You should be able to say to someone, I hate that idea.
Totally.
Have a conversation and move forward. And I mean, I've had leaders say to me before, like, I haven't had someone tell me they hated my idea in years. And it's like, well, because they're not telling you the truth. Because we all have just shitty ideas. I have shitty ideas all the time. And when we don't surround ourselves with people who are willing to be honest, like, you know, sometimes my perspective is wrong, but at least I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that kind of yes person, that wanting to hear yourself be validated, that echo chamber, really, it does so much harm in organizations on so many levels, culture, inclusion, business results. Like it is a killer in organizations for sure.
It is, and it permeates, especially if it's one person and they have sort of a sort of stranglehold on a group or a function, like they will find a way to get their way, but it's going to be to the detriment of the greater good, which I would say it's going to be all decisions that flow will benefit that individual, but could really be counterproductive for other people within that org. So that's what always worries me. And if there's not somebody stepping in and intervening and saying, no, like we need to look at things through many different lenses, not that just this person's lens.
One thing I want to hear, you know, obviously you and I have both had experiences where we've experienced manipulation at work.
Yeah.
What could someone do after they've, what do? You realize, oh, wow, I've been manipulated, or, oh, wow, this person manipulates me consistently. What are some actions someone can take other than, you know, one of my favorite actions that I go, peace out. Outside of, you know, exiting an organization, exiting a team, what are some options someone can take?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's hard because you also have to you have to analyze how pervasive it is as well.
Yes.
Because I would say, to your point, if it's pervasive, it's going to be really hard to come up with those actions, right? And if it is affecting your mental health on a day-to-day basis, like it's not going to be for you long-term because you're constantly going to be thinking and focused on it, and it's just going to burn you out. I will say that, you know, in places where it's kind of, you know, that it's one person in particular, I always say try to really build relationships around other members of those teams, right? Whether they're other department heads, other leadership, you know, other members of the leadership team, really get to know them and the way they think, and really see if there's a way to get some, you know, some mentorship or feedback. I think it's the way that you shape that. Like if you're saying, you know, I'm struggling with this individual, and I'd love to understand your experiences, and if there's a better way to navigate our relationship. Now, I'm going to be completely honest, like, as we all know, some people, even if they have had an experience with an individual, they're not necessarily going to be forthcoming because it can be a little bit of self-preservation, like, I'm just here to do the work. I just want to get stuff done. I'm not looking to, you know, engage, even if it could help somebody, right? But there are other people, if you develop that ongoing relationship, that would be willing to open up a little bit more. and maybe gives you some tips and tricks. And I think that is particularly important if you're an early career HR professional, like we were talking about. Like, if you don't know where to turn, having more voices, having more people internally to speak to, is going to be really important, because you should trust your instincts, right? And beware of the sort of the tactics that we were talking about before, because you do need to have boundaries in place. You know, I also think, like, you know, an obvious one is, as we would say, is seeking support from HR. And that can be challenging at times, because some people don't trust their HR department, and they wonder if their focus is just supporting management. So, and whether they're going to be fair and equitable, and, you know, may fear retaliation of information going back to an individual when they're sharing. So I think, you know, again, if you've developed a relationship with somebody in HR where they feel like a safe space, or it's a function that has proven that, then that's obviously going to be another place to leverage support. So I think it's really trusted colleagues, HR and management, if it's necessary, but picking somebody that you feel truly comfortable with. I think outside of that, it's pretty hard. I don't know if you have any other thoughts.
You know, I don't. It is hard. As you're saying that, I'm thinking, like, oh gosh, there's some of the HR leaders are super duper manipulative. My career. I mean, these are usually at the big, large organizations. But I think it's important to recognize too, like, there are sometimes, I've worked in organizations where the overall culture is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Love the organization. And then the function I was existing in, HR, was incredibly manipulative and dysfunctional. And I love what you said about the HR person, the HR team has built that credibility, or the manager or whoever has built that credibility. I think that that's really key. I also think you said it earlier, like, think about your own mental health and how you're doing and, like, where you are in that moment, because there have been moments where I'm like, I don't really like who I am in this situation or who I am in this organization. And when those moments happen, they are a big old red flashing sign to understand something has to change.
And I think that's such a good point, because now you start to wonder, am I, you know, sort of, God forbid, am I absorbing some of these characteristics? Have I taken them on through pure interaction with this individuals? And then you have to do, you know, you have to do some thinking and say, if I stay here any longer, is this going to have a further effect on who I am as a employee, whether it's here or elsewhere longer term? Like, what's it going to say about me and how I'm going to interact with other people at work? So I think you hit the nail on the head on that one. Like, I think it's not only draining, but it's like, oh, what is it doing to you and the way that you operate at work? And people may see a shift in your behavior because of it. And rightfully so in your mind, but not necessarily rightfully so in theirs.
Right. I also think too, sometimes just recognizing, just understanding, and finally, like, light bulb moment, recognizing someone is manipulating you for whatever reason, I think is a powerful way to, like, go, okay, I now understand that this person is willing to manipulate me. And now I can take a beat when I'm having interactions, when I'm working with this person, and adjust accordingly.
Yeah,
that's a lot to deal with. Like, to your point earlier, is it one person or is it a pervasive issue in the organization? I have managed that everyone is like that, and it is emotionally exhausting. But if it's maybe one person and you have to kind of manage those interactions, listen.
Yeah.
We all have someone we have to work with. It's a pain in our butt. So that's a little bit more doable than, again, like you said, that pervasive culture.
Yeah. And also thinking about, this is where I struggle with core values as well. This is a quick reminder that, like, if some of your core values are things like transparency and accountability, and you're letting these kind of behaviors happen, then again, these aren't things that you really believe in. It becomes, your core values are very much performative to who you are as an organization. And so, you know, it can create that sense of, you know, that sense of misaligned burnout, which is happening more and more today, right? Where people are companies where they have core values that don't align with their own. And it just becomes a real hardship to work at those places, right? And, you know, it's tricky in this environment because, you know, I think the thing we forget is this market is pretty unprecedented right now and people are languishing. Mm-hmm. And so many, for financial reasons and personal reasons, are feeling that they have to get a job. You know, people are desperate to have a paycheck, and I get that. But as a result, they're joining organizations that could really have a bad or negative impact on their mental health long term. So it becomes a double-edged sword. It's like, yes, you can put food on the plate for your family, you can provide, but what is it going to do to your own mental state along the way?
Absolutely. Oh, core values. Oh.
I mean, they're a blessing and a curse, as I always say.
Well, when they're actually real core values, they're amazing.
Correct.
But I think often organizations are like, we need core values. And then they have like a fun little brainstorm with their executive team and they post them on their website and they're like, look at us, we're so cool. And I heard someone say this and it has stuck with me, but it's, when you're going to go and decide on your core values as an organization, if you're really believing in them, a violation of your core values should be immediately a terminable offense.
Yep.
I was like, yep. Oh, I yep. love that. Because yep. it is like, if this is something that we so strongly believe, you should be ready to do that. And I'm like, most organizations, I think, are not ready to do that. Mm-hmm. And they're not there. And, you know, when I think about trauma and I think about, you know, psychology and psychological betrayal, core values very clearly are shared, promoted as we're asking folks to join organizations, and then are quickly betrayed. Mm-hmm. Not only is that hypocrisy, but it also creates institutional betrayal.
Yep.
And just, if you're not going to take your core values seriously, you're almost better off not having any of them. Mm-hmm. Because at least you're not setting this false expectation and creating an additional harm because mm-hmm. that's not followed through.
Yeah. Or just taking the time to make sure that they are the right ones that yes. everyone is bought into. It's not an exercise of speed. It's an exercise of getting it right.
Yes.
And I think that's sometimes lost in the process. The other thing I would also say that I didn't quite touch on before, but like one thing to be really important to spot is whether you feel like you're being used by someone or not.
Yes.
And, you know, I say that because, you know, and it's funny that I would use a Bravo or Real Housewives reference on here, but it's a bit of an analogy for me in this case. You know, sometimes if for people that have watched that show, you know, certain housewives feel like they use other housewives to do their dirty work. And I feel like that can show up in the workplace too. It's like when somebody has an agenda, mm-hmm. But they don't want to get their hands dirty, they will try to leverage you. And manipulate you to get that done. And, you know, it's one thing if you've got support for it, but if you are sort of a Joan of Arc and sort of on your own island trying to fight a cause like that, it can become a real hardship for you in terms of dealing with that. So I think that's another thing that we don't necessarily think about as well.
Oh, such a good point, because who in HR has not been asked to do the dirty work mm-hmm. or even if like just be there for the dirty work so I can blame you for it? Like I talk about HR as a scapegoat all the time, but it is just like there's a reason everyone is obsessed with calling out HR or blaming HR for everything on the internet and social media. It's because we're consistently asked to do the dirty work or consistently mm-hmm. scapegoated within the organizations
yeah.
we're partners in.
It's
one of the most frustrating things, I think, about the function.
It is, because I think we are, for people that want to do the right thing and lead with integrity and creative and creating inclusive and equitable workplaces that, you know, that are basically, that are very innovative also in nature. Part of that is going to be speaking up and making decisions that aren't going to always be popular, but that doesn't mean that person should become the fool guy or the fool girl in that situation either, you know, just because you've had, you know, you've taken it upon yourself. There's a lot of courage to be able to do that. But I would say the danger is that courage isn't always rewarded, right? It's kind of similar to when people come out, come up with a, you know, and I know you'll understand this too. It's like when people are fearful of coming out and saying, you know, making a claim or an allegation about somebody in the workplace, because they wonder whether they'll be taken seriously. They wonder whether they'll be retaliated against and what that will mean for their long-term prospects in the workplace, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, it's a really dangerous kind of web.
Absolutely. It's so true. It's so true. So I want to pivot. We have a few minutes left.
Yeah.
I want to pivot maybe to an interesting question.
Okay. Have none of them been interesting yet?
Well, like... a spicier question.
Oh, okay. I like spicy. You know that.
So I think sometimes there are intentional manipulators or intentional wrongdoers in the workplace. But I think a lot of times the systems we kind of grow up in organizations teach us some really shitty behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, perhaps you're listening to this podcast and you're like, yeah, I've experienced manipulation. But I also think it's really important for us to reflect on our own behavior. What signs can we look for in our own behavior that we may be manipulating others in the workplace?
Such a good question.
I told you it was spicy.
I know you did. And, you know, I would... hazard a guess, well, not hazard a guess, that if we all look, if we really hand on heart looked at ourselves, that there have been points in our career where we've done that, right? I'm sure I have.
Same, yes.
You know, I do. And I think now you're making me think of one. I will say one of the things that I truly believe feedback is a gift, but I don't think in my entire career that I always exhibited that. So I feel that I love to give feedback and very consistently. So you always know or knew where you stood with me. But there were moments where I could, you know, be more defensive about the feedback that was coming my way, right? And when you tell people that really it's a two-way process, but then you operate like that, that does feel a bit manipulative and confusing as well. So that's one I would say. And also because it feels like you're not taking ultimate accountability for your actions. So I do think that's one that, you know, stands out for me. What about for you?
For me, I think, you know, what's interesting for me is we talk about, at least for me, I talked about influencing so much in my career as an in-house HR professional.
Mm-hmm.
Influencing is such an important skill set.
Yeah.
And I think the kind of ugly side of influencing is manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
It is the, you know, when we look at Jekyll and Hyde, it's influencing and manipulation. And for me, when I think about it, it's, you know, something you said earlier about transparency. Am I being transparent as I'm looking to influence the situation? Am I, you know, really doing the work to be as transparent as you can be?
Yeah.
I know it's always challenging in HR.
Yeah.
And I also think this is a moment to reflect on your intentions. Kind of do that internal work. What's my goal here? What am I trying to do? And then checking in on those relationships, like what you're asking someone to do for you, would you do for them in return? And mm-hmm. and kind of having that self-check. Because I think to me, that's where I've slid into that place of manipulation, as not being transparent enough, not checking my intentions, letting that influencing kind of slide into manipulation.
Yep. Well, and I think you bring up a really good point in that I kind of bifurcate influencing because I think the real positive aspect, as we both know with influencing, is if you're doing it for the greater good of the business, right?
Right.
So yes. You're socializing ideas and influencing people because you know that if they follow sort of your train of thinking, it could be really beneficial for the business. Now, if it comes from a place of it's only going to personally benefit you or very few people, that's when it becomes more manipulative because yes. People, if they can't look around and say, how does this benefit or help me? That becomes challenging. And again, we're not here to make everyone happy, as we know, but the majority, at least, and whatever you consider the majority, I always say, if you can get 80% on board, it's great. But if it's only benefiting 10 to 20%, then something's kind of gone awry in the process.
Right. Oh, I love that. That is a great way to think about it. That's yes. Plus 10 to that for sure.
I love a plus 10.
Yeah, not just plus one, plus 10.
Plus 10.
I know we're kind of closing out our time and I want to make sure and give you a chance to tell our listeners, you know, what you're working on, where they can find you, follow your work. So would love if you would share that.
Absolutely. So I'd say the best way to find me, and Stephanie knows that because I am not short on posting content on LinkedIn. Avid poster.
Nor would we want you to be. We love your content.
Thank you.
You want spicy. Alex has got us covered.
Spicy and nuggets and all different things. So yes. I'm on LinkedIn as Alex Seiler, S-E-I-L-E-R. I think there's a few of us. But if you see a chief people officer, startup advisor, that is me. That is probably the best way to reach me, first of all. And also happy to always answer if people want to connect and have questions. I'm always happy to DM or message back. I think the work that I'm doing is very much the sort of things I've been talking about already is the fractional piece of my business. I will say I am in one of those strange inflection points in my career where, you know, without sounding cliched, as Chip Connelly says, I'm not having a midlife crisis, I'm having a midlife chrysalis. And I'm trying to decide between, you know, do I want to continue building out fractional business? I've only been doing it for 6 months, but there are some interesting opportunities that continue to come my way, which I feel very fortunate about. Or, you know, if the right in-person sort of in-house role, which we talked about what that would need to look like a little bit, comes along, then evaluating that as well. So, if I can ever be helpful to folks, considering I've had experience in-house, now some experience from doing fractional and doing startup advisory work, happy to do that and try to make sure that I'm providing content that speaks to that as well.
Absolutely. Alex, it is always so amazing to talk to you. This has been such an insightful and fun conversation. I so appreciate you. Alex's LinkedIn is linked in the show notes, so make sure and go follow him if you are not already. And until next time, be well.